in order to provide revenue as soon as possible, they're going to do 4 units at a time. Get the first 4 units done, get those rented out while they're working on the next 4 units. Roll through the construction that way so that we can, instead of waiting, getting all 22 units coming online at the same time.
Welcome to Multifamily Deal Lab. We're your host, Dave Lindahl, dissects recent multifamily deals done by his guests. Dave will extract what went right, what went wrong, and a number of key takeaways so your next deal may be more profitable.
All right, welcome to Multifamily Millions Deal Lab Podcast. I'm Dave Lindahl, and I've got a special guest today. His name is Larry Colster. And Larry, tell everybody who you are and where you're from.
Larry Colster, and I'm from Houston, Texas.
Awesome. How long have you been in Houston? Sounds like you've been there all your life.
No, actually 12 years. Before that, really? I was in Kansas City.
Oh, nice. Who's got better barbecue?
That's a tough one. They're all good. I lean towards Kansas City, but maybe that's because that's what I grew up on.
Do you cook it yourself?
I do. Yeah. Got a pellet grill and I love it.
All right. So let's talk about the deal, the most recent deal that you just did. 62 unit property, mixed use, but you're actually going to take that mixed use and convert it. It was $4.85 million deal. Approximately, what is it, $1.4 million raise?
$2.3 million, actually.
Oh, $2.3 million. Okay, good. All right, so let's take it from the very beginning. First of all, was this your first deal, or what number deal was this?
This was my first deal as the lead.
Okay, awesome. Yep. So how did you come up with this deal?
Oh, it's interesting. It was actually off the RE Mentor site. So I was just checking to see what people had posted out on the site. And one of the students had just posted that they had a deal. They were looking for someone to sponsor them. So I called them up and we connected. And so we got started on this deal, and unfortunately, about 6 weeks into it, his employer raised some objections, and they had to step off, so we paid them a nice fee for finding the property, and I ended up taking it over from there.
So you found it off the RE Mentor Mentorship Facebook site?
Yes. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, there's a lot of things that happen on that site, between raising money and getting deals together, people partnering with each other. Pretty good. People announcing the deal that they just did, which is always exciting.
Yeah.
All right. So you get into the deal that way. And then how much were they asking?
That was the asking price. It was an off-market deal. And we could get it at that price and felt like we should jump on it and grab it before they put it on the market.
Okay. So there was no negotiation. Took it as is. Explain the property. Explain the deal. What made it appealing?
So as any good deal, it's got quite a story. A developer came in and took about 12 acres up in Longview. And developed
Longview, Texas.
Texas.
Yep.
And developed 2 hotels, a restaurant, and this mixed use building. And unfortunately for him, he got overextended, and 3 of the 4 properties went back to the bank. So the credit union actually held it for a couple of years. They put it out to sell. The first buyer ended up backing out. And then the owner that we bought it from bought it towards the beginning of 2021 in the spring, and it was almost empty at that time. And it had never been completely finished either. So it was a partially finished, built in 2016. And when we came in, it was at about 60% occupancy. And then by Thanksgiving, it was up to 76% occupancy. And it's got a lot of upside. And so we're really excited about it. And in addition to that, we got into it. We're going to keep it mixed use. Looked like we could make a good profit that way, but the lenders were balking at it because it had been sitting since 2016 and the retail space had never been finished or rented. So they were looking at that and saying, well, that looks like unrentable space. Well, it had never been even offered up to rent.
It had never been put on the market to rent?
No, it was all, some of the units were sheetrocked, others weren't, but none of them were finished off. None had electricity or AC or anything.
So there wasn't a leasing agent working that deal, that part of the deal?
No. The owner that we bought it from had paid cash for it and was content just renting up a few units and taking them 1 or 2 units at a time back, bring them online.
Had you talked to any leasing agents about renting up that space and what you get per square foot?
We did. And when we stepped back and did the analysis, we realized we could actually make more converting it to all multifamily than we could for retail. It's really not ideal for retail because it's not right on the road. It's a quarter of a mile off the road up in the middle of this 12 acres that he developed, and we could get a better cap rate on it. We could get better interest rate on the loan. And when we go to sell it, we'd have a lot more buyers. So we ended up shifting gears in the middle, which is part of the reason why this took 5 months to from LOI to closing.
shifted gears to go bring it over on the apartment side, making it all multifamily?
Yeah, make it all residential to convert that commercial space into loft apartments.
How many commercial spaces were there?
12.
12. And so you're going to convert each one of those 12 spaces into an apartment, or did you make a different mix?
Basically, so those 12 will be converted into two apartments. There will be one on the front side and one on the back side.
Oh, and how many bedrooms?
It'll be a mix of one and two bedrooms. Most of them are one bedrooms right now.
Okay, that's interesting. So that must have been a pretty big space.
The commercial units were about 1,400 to 1,700 square feet each.
All right, great. All right, so you do the analysis. You're going to be getting more as an apartment than you are for a commercial space. Where did you get the numbers for that analysis? Well, how did you determine what you would get for a commercial space?
Well, we worked with local brokers and got some feedback on what we could rent it for the commercial space if we converted it to apartments. And then we also got some estimates on what it'd take to convert to apartments and then ran the numbers, and it just decided in the long run, even though it's more work, it would be better to go ahead and convert it all to apartments.
Yeah, the one big thing is the tenant improvements. It's the thing that kind of hangs out there, what you're going to have to negotiate for tenant improvements. Every new tenant comes in and also when you're switching over. Less risk there for sure. All right. So now you said the lenders blocked on it. Where did you get the finance for this? Now this has turned into a construction loan?
Yeah, a large construction element. Our construction rehab budget is $2.3 million on a $4.8 million purchase. And 1.5 of that's for the first floor conversions. And we're going to add a pool and leasing office and a fitness center in the front of the building.
So you're buying for 4.8, you're adding in 2.8, so you're all in for 7.6 or so?
Yes.
And what did you project your return is going to be in 3 to 5 years?
On 3 years, our projection is that after improvements, it's going to be worth a little over $10 million. We'll be able to refinance, pay back all the investors' money, and then be able to keep it for another 5 to 7 years, just let it cash flow with no money in the deal.
That's a good return. So are you keeping the investors in the deal, or are the investors going to exit at the refi?
So it's a JV deal, and yeah, we're keeping everybody in the deal.
So for those that aren't familiar with the joint venture structure, can you just give a quick insight, the difference between joint venture and syndication and why you chose to go joint venture?
Well, the main reason that we chose joint venture is because it's a great deal. We had three investors that came in and were willing to provide all the money that we needed. And so it made it kind of easy. We didn't need a syndication because we had all the money raised. So a joint venture, everybody in the deal needs to be active because you don't have the passive investor side, which is why you syndicate so that you can bring in passive investors. Since all of our investors have done deals in the past on the management side, then it worked out great. And we've got a really solid team of all of our members are seasoned multifamily investors. And so we had some great collaborative calls and still do. We have everybody on the team participating in the weekly calls with the management team.
Okay. So just to clarify for people watching and listening, that with three people in the deal, that still could have been a syndication because if the other two people don't have management responsibilities and you're pretty much controlling the deal, you or one other, because the definition of a syndication is two or more people in a deal and the other people don't take part in management decisions. So you bring three people into the deal. Talk about that conversation about how this is going to be a joint venture deal instead of a syndication. And I guess it would all start with, where did you find these people? Where did you get these people for the deal?
So they're all people that already knew. So I worked with team, already mentor team with Rebecca and Brian, and they are assisting me and our partners in the deal.
Rebecca Stupenagel.
Yes.
They were both just at an event that we did last week, Killzone event.
Right.
And I introduced her as the person with the most interesting last name in real estate.
That is
Stupenagel.
True.
Yeah. Because when I think of Stupenagel, I think of Schnitzel. She admitted to the fact that she is German, of German heritage. So they go together well. But that name just rolls off your tongue. Stupid. It's great.
Yes, that's why she's always Rebecca when I talk about her.
Yeah. Oh, so that's awesome. I wasn't aware that they were part of this deal. So that's good. So you bring them into the deal. You guys talk about JV. Who brought up the JV situation? Was it them?
Yeah, actually, Rebecca brought it up. So I'm in several other deals as part of the JV team with Rebecca and Brian, but not as the lead, to where this deal, they're letting me take the lead and run with it. And so, and then we brought in Kathy Fontana as our property, class A property management is managing the property. And yeah, it's been a great team. And then we've got investors that are active in the deal as well. So
yeah, they're great. I think they did like 12 deals last year.
Yeah.
They're moving and shaking, which is awesome.
Absolutely.
Okay, so you raised all the money through them, through your other partners?
Yes.
So there it is. Okay, so that's a JV. Yep. Okay, awesome. Any special type of arrangement inside of that joint venture? Or was everybody same split?
In the end, we all were. There's negotiations like always. So this is, since this is a great deal, you know, we were able to work it out so that we all are coming out in really good shape in the deal. And that's key, win-win opportunities. And this is one of them. So it was pretty easy since it, we were all collaborated. We all got on a call and just worked things out.
I know Brian's really good at rehab. How much do you, putting in $2.4 million, how much is that per door? I guess we really don't. That doesn't really matter. How long do you think it's going to be before you totally, the property's completely ready?
A year and a half.
And then lease up is going on right now. So are you making units ready at the same time as converting over those office spaces?
So right now, when we took possession, 40 of the 50 units were occupied. And I'll take that back. I'm sorry. 36 of the 50. We had a drop right there in the last month. And part of it was because we didn't want the current management company to lease up the units because we didn't feel like their criteria was up to our standards. So the make-ready units were, we have those, most of those turned. And then we have 7 down units that had some damage from broken pipes. This is Dallas and we have occasional cold snaps. One of the downsides of the units being vacant. And so we're working on getting all the 50 upstairs units online and rented out. And then the downstairs, we have an architect working on the plans right now, working on getting plans that we can build off of. We want to get closed before we really dove into that completely. And so at the end of the month, he's going to have the plans ready to take to the city and get the permits pulled. And then once we start, we're looking at about 15 months. And so in order to provide revenue as soon as possible, they're going to do 4 units at a time. Get the first 4 units done, get those rented up while they're working on the next 4 units and roll through the construction that way so that we can, instead of waiting, getting all 22 units coming online at the same time.
Awesome. What surprises have popped up in this deal?
There's been a bunch of them.
All right.
Yeah, the biggest one was just finding out that we were having problems getting a lender, and what we thought was going to be about a 3.7% rate, which is what the brokers were telling us at the beginning, ended up being up in the 7s.
What?
Yeah, up in the 7s. And
wow.
For a non-recourse loan. And even after we, so this was the interesting part. The lenders were pushing back because there's this retail space that had never been rented.
Yeah.
And so they said, well, we don't really feel like you can rent it. We went back and we did further analysis and decided, hey, let's just change the commercial. So we changed it, to loft apartments, and so it's going to be all residential. Brokers went back, and now the lender said, well, wait a minute, you're flip-flopping on us, so now we're not sure because you're flip-flopping. And it's like, well, we're doing what was supposed to be a better loan, and we had a loan commitment that we thought we had locked in, and we went back to the mortgage broker and said, okay, we're ready. And then a couple of days later, he came back and said, well, the lender does want to do it now. And so then at this point, we were over three months in, and so we had to go back and kind of start over, reboot. And we were going to go with a local bank and we were working with them, but it became obvious that this was, they were in over their head and they were talking about, well, we can get the property closed in December and then come back and do the construction loan in January. But if we do the initial loan and then we can't work out the construction loan, then we're not in good shape. So we went back to another lender that we finally got closed on and managed to get it closed on December 29th, right before the end of the year.
Wow. What did the 3% increase in the interest rate do to your numbers? How does this deal still work with a 3% bump in what you thought you were going in at?
So what we ended up with was a recourse loan with the bank. And so we got 3.75%. And for the first year and a half, it's a variable rate. It's the prime plus 0.5. And then after we finish the construction phase in month 19, then it switches to a fixed 3.75%. And so that's the only way we could get it done. And we just decided it was worth the recourse component to get the lower interest rate. So that's how we ended up making it work.
Okay. So you're 3 to 7 to what was the final interest rate?
3.75.
Oh, so it did. So it bounced back down when you did the recourse.
Yeah.
Okay. I get it. Now, on that recourse, was there a clause in there that basically stated that at 85% occupancy for a 3-month period, that recourse drops off?
Yes. We do have those milestones and built into it. Yes.
Yeah, that's really important for anybody that is going into a recourse loan, is that once that property stabilizes, you want that recourse to drop off. And typically, you're the one that has to notify the bank because they want to keep that recourse on as long as possible.
Right.
So, so get that added into your term sheet when possible. Okay, so that was once. But any other big surprises on that deal?
Yeah, so 2 days before closing, we were set to close, had all the money raised, and we got the final loan agreement, which I'd been pushing for quite a while, and found out that the way that they interpreted the terms, they held the entire reserve amount in reserves, the entire rehab amount of $2.3 million.
Yeah.
They wanted all that in reserve, and it threw our numbers all off.
Was there a draw schedule?
We have a draw schedule built into the construction loan for that piece. But what ended up happening was 2 days before closing, we found out that we needed to raise another $600,000 just to close.
And because they were holding the initial money back and you need that money, you need that capital to start the project.
Right.
Where did that money come from? That is a big surprise.
So the day before closing, we managed to come up with another investor that was willing to come in with the $600,000 and get us closed.
Wow.
And it was a little bit stressful.
So that must have been an investor on somebody's list that they had experience with.
Yes.
Yep. All right. Good. Well, the numbers must really work if somebody was willing to analyze them in a day and give you a check for $600,000. That's pretty good. Answer this question for me. I wish I knew blank before I get into this deal.
The first thing is I wish I knew how much work it was going to be because I had no idea how many details there were that you had to go through. And obviously, I wish I would have known where we're going to end up. It would have made it a lot easier from the get-go. But I look at it as a great learning experience with all the twists and turns we had. When I do just a plain vanilla, park straight up value added deal, it's going to seem like a piece of cake compared to this deal that we wound through.
So the amount of work that it took was because this deal was different, because it was you were doing a conversion.
Right.
You had to go back and forth between commercial deal, multifamily deal. Not only did you have to understand it, you had to help the lender understand it. You had to look at your alternatives in order to get the deal done in terms of the financing and what's the best way to go about it. Was this deal dead with at 7% interest rate?
Yeah. I mean, the way it is, we're just at break even the first year. And then once we get all the units online, then we really are doing great. Yeah, it's going to be tough the first year and a half.
And after that, you get a nice long-term hold.
Yes, absolutely.
Awesome. That's great. So, Jermaine, pop in. We're going to open up the Q&A now.
All right. Let me look to see who has wrote any questions in. All right. The first one is from Dennis. He wants to know, since this is a JV deal, does everyone have a vote in what happens with the property?
Yes, they do. We get on a call and it's based on membership percents, which we worked out as well. Interestingly enough, the membership percents are a little bit different than what the voting rights are. So our big investors have large voting rights and we have to agree on things to move forward. So everybody has a vote.
Yeah, and that's a requirement for a JV structure as well. Everybody has to take part in management decisions.
Yeah.
Next, Jermaine.
All right, next question. This one's from Mary. She wants to know, was there anyone in your group who wanted to keep the bottom units retail?
No, we were all in agreement when we looked at the numbers that that's what made sense. We were all in agreement on it.
Next.
Perfect. This one's from Danny. Actually, Harris wants to know, and I think you answered this, but can you, I don't know if he heard this. He wants to know, what was the vacancy of the property when you first got the deal?
When we first got it, it was about 40% vacancy.
Okay,
and the interesting thing there is that it's 40% vacancy in those, that 40% at that time, those were units that had never, ever been rented. They didn't even have appliances in them. And that's what's interesting is a 2016 build, but a lot of the units had never even been occupied. So it made it a little different. So we've got units where they've got very light use on them.
That brings up another question. So at 40% vacancy, what was your break even on this project? And I'm assuming that you were negative going in. And then what month did you project break even to be? How many months out? And then where did you come up with that capital in order to make it to that particular date? Three questions.
So we're projecting out that the first 4 months will be negative cash flow, and then we'll start having positive cash flow at month five.
So what is your break even? What's your break even occupancy?
Break even occupancy, I believe, is 80%. I don't have it right in front of me.
Okay, no problem. And then, so you got to carry for 4 months.
So part of why that gets complicated is because the rents are well under market. So we're also raising rents at the same time. So even with the occupancy staying the same, we're going to increase revenue. So it depends. If you're looking at the break even on the current rents, then it's about 80%. But on the new rents, it would be closer to 70%.
Yeah, it's interesting because you have two dynamics working. You get your actual break even per unit, but then as rents are increased, that number actually goes down. So I guess you'd really be looking at what's the cost to operate this property per month and how soon can you fill that gap?
Mm-hmm.
And that would be 4 months. So that's good.
Yeah.
All right. Next question.
All right. This question is from Jess. He wants to know, what were the best resources that helped you through this deal?
Well, the best resources was my team, Brian and Rebecca, and just leaning on the team. You know, that's part of the things that Dave teaches us is you need a good team and you need investors. And that's absolutely true. And I've got people that I've worked with previous projects, and that's what made it happen. By myself, I couldn't have done it. And that's also why I like commercial real estate. Doing the multifamily is because it's a team sport. When you get into the single family, it tends to be more Lone Ranger type stuff. But here, you need people around you that can trust and that you can discuss things with. And when things come up, then you can collaborate and figure out what the best route is. And getting a good team is the most important thing that you can do in this business.
So I see in the show notes that you also used RE Indicator as a software. What did you use that for? For those who don't know, RE Indicator is a software that actually tells you where the market is in the market cycle. Specifically, did you use that software for? What did it tell you about that particular market?
Well, that's the first thing I do with any property that I get, no matter where I get it from, is pull it up. And there's some, I pull it up and it says it's a D neighborhood. And in the beginning, I would kind of question about, well, is that really a D neighborhood? But then I go and drive it, and it's like, yeah, it's really a D neighborhood.
Yeah.
And so if it's a D neighborhood and RE Indicator, a lot of times I'll just pass on it immediately. Normally, you're looking for the properties, the C-class, but they were built in the 70s and 80s. Normally, those were in C neighborhood, sometimes a B neighborhood. This particular property is in a B neighborhood, but the right across the street, 100 yards to the north, is an A neighborhood. And really like the location. Another advantage of that, this location is it's about 3/4 mile from a regional hospital. And they actually rented space in the parking lot of our property when they redid the parking lot at the hospital because it was so close. So we're thinking that that's going to be a big plus for us. But RE Indicator, it's really important to see what type of neighborhood you're in the surrounding neighborhoods, because you may be in a C neighborhood and say, well, maybe I'm okay. But if it's surrounded by D neighborhoods, and it's like, well, you know, how many people are going to want to move into this type of area? And it's been very accurate from what I've seen so far, because I use a lot here in Houston where I know the neighborhood. Every time I wonder if it's correct and I go out and drive it, it's amazingly accurate.
It's spot on. He's got that algorithm down.
He does.
Jermaine, next question.
So the next question is from Jean. She wants to know, if you had to do this over again, would you have?
That's a great question. Yeah, absolutely. I would have. It was challenging. And those that know me know I'm very detailed, which makes it a little more challenging. And that's why it took me a little longer to get in my first deal, because I tend to get into analysis paralysis. But what I've learned on this deal has been amazing and valuable. And it's also going to provide me with a great return at the end. So yeah, I would absolutely do it again.
Yeah, you know, you get the best experience from those deals that have so many different components to it, not your vanilla type of deal.
Right.
Absolutely. Those real estate gut fast. Jermaine, next question.
All right, this is for both of you guys. This is from Sammy. He wants to know, what almost made you quit, and who was it that stopped you from quitting?
You can go with that, Lester.
Oh, it's interesting because I've got this diagram that...
Sorry, Larry. I called you Lester. Your name's Larry.
Found this diagram called Journey of Success, and it's incredible. And it's like up the top is sunny and bright, and down at the bottom is kind of dark, and you start at the top, and then you work your way around. You know, you want a better life, you find a mentor, you invest in yourself. And then it starts getting kind of down in the gray areas where, you know, you learn a new skill, but then your family and friends don't support you. Nothing works. You think about quitting. And that's where it gets tough when you're out there, you're looking for your first deal, and it seems like keep looking and looking and you're not getting there. And that's the next step in this wheel is you remember your why. And to me, that's the most important thing to keep from quitting, is you have to identify what your why is. Like in our case, it's right there in our company name. We didn't like having the W-2 jobs. And so my wife brilliantly came up with this name of QMJ. And when she first brought it up, it's like, what the heck is that? She said, quit my job. And so our company has quit my job properties, and that's what this is all about, so that we can be independent and have flexible schedules. But our why is really to spend more time with the grandkids and to be able to have the freedom of supporting charities, doing what we want to do instead of what other people dictate for us. And that's what kept me going. And that's really important to know what your why is, what's driving you to want to be successful here. And then when things get tough and it's like, am I ever going to turn the corner? Then you have to go back to why you're doing it. And then you end up keep working, find success, and then you finally pop up into the sunny side again. And that's what this deal did for me, was when I was getting frustrated because I was seeing people that came in after I did that were closing deals and starting to wonder if I was ever going to get a deal closed. But just kept at it. And then this deal came up and popped out the other side. So, but yeah, the key is, yeah, I think everybody thinks about that at one point, and that's where you really got to dig deep and say, I'm going to keep going and make it to the other side.
Yep. That's called the gap. Where do you keep that image?
On the wall in my office.
Can you take a picture of that and send it over?
Yeah. Actually, it's interesting. Yeah, I've got it right here. So.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, take a picture. I send it over to Jeannie Germain. We'll send it all out to the mentorship students as well, so you can get a copy of it. But I'd be interested to see that, because what you just brought up is what I call the gap. And that is, you start a project, you're all excited, things are going good, the first initial steps are really easy, but then all of a sudden it starts to get difficult. And it's not quite what you expected. And then you go into this dark period. And you either, if you know, some people make it through the gap and some people don't. But knowing that you have to go through that gap to get to the bright side, because everybody goes through the gap, knowing that, then that helps you get to the other side. So having a diagram like that would be great, so people know the physiological and mental things that you go through as you're starting this business and as you continue on to this business. So it's just like, I'm an endurance athlete. So on those long races, you always hit the wall. My coach always told me from the very beginning, you're going to hit the wall, and this is how you get to the other side. And the first part was always know that it's only going to be 15 to 20 minutes. Know that it's going to be for a period of time, but the period of time is going to end. And then you'll get to the other side. So yeah, that's really important. Jermaine, another question?
Yeah, we got a couple of more. This was a comment from Maggie. She wants you to know, Larry, that your company name is awesome. And she wrote that in big letters. So this one's from Jay. He wants to know, what do you wish you had known when you first started this project that may have made your journey faster?
Well, if we would have identified up front that we should convert it all to residential from the beginning, that would have made it a lot easier. But I mean, every project, you're going to go in with it and find unknowns as you go through it. It's part of the business. And that's what you learn, is there's always going to be surprises and things that don't work out as planned. And, like when we move in and find out that, well, actually, when we did the due diligence, the hot water heater was out, and finding out that the parking lot lights don't work because the valves went out and they never replaced them. And just the surprises you don't know about. And it's filling in the contingencies to handle that. But, I'd do it again, even if I had to go through the same path, because I'm so much better off today. And it's still going to be a profitable project. It was just trial by fire.
Sweet. Next one.
So I have to read this because I thought it was funny. Maggie says, you don't know what you don't know, just like giving birth.
Yeah, pretty much.
And I guess you're never going to know that, Larry.
All right. Last question so far is from Danny. He wants to know, what are the proudest moments in this journey so far? Or what are your proudest moments of this journey so far?
Actually, I think it's meeting people that don't know anything about commercial real estate and talking to them about it and how the returns can be great, and having them say, okay, I don't really understand it, but I trust you, and I'm going to invest with you because I trust you to take care of my money. And I take a lot of responsibility with that, but also a lot of pride that, people see me as being honest and trustworthy and will trust their money with me to invest it and keep it safe for them.
Awesome. Any others, Jermaine?
Another question just came in. This is from Marilyn. She wants to know, is this your first deal? And how long did it take you to get this deal?
So this is the first deal that is my deal. And I've been at this for 2 years now. Now, part of that, started my training in September of 2019 and was kind of getting traction. Had my first LOI that I thought was going to get accepted, and then COVID hit. And so I was right there on the cusp of getting my first deal, and COVID hit and threw everything into a tailspin. and took a little bit to reset. And the more experienced people jumped in a little bit sooner. But I was still like, well, where are we at on COVID? And that was really threw me off for a full year, I would say, set me a year behind because of trying to sort all that out and where we're at. But, you know, it's a little bit different for everybody. And I tend to be very cautious and waited for the right deal to come along. So,
absolutely. All right. We good, Jermaine?
That is it, Dave. Thanks, Larry.
All right. That has been another edition of Multifamily Deal Lab. Absolutely. See you next time.
This has been another edition of Multifamily Deal Lab. If watching on YouTube, please be sure to hit the like button, the subscribe button, so you don't miss the next session, and review the contact links on this page.